It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the episode and the series. Please do hit that subscribe button if you're not already. I put out three new interviews every single week, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, actor Harry Melling. We're going to be talking about The Pale Blue Eye. It's now streaming on Netflix. And this is a movie that finds Harry playing Edgar Allan Poe, portraying Edgar Allan Poe, a young Poe, I should say, in the 1800s, on a quest to find a murder opposite a retired detective that's played by Christian Bale. Harry's going to talk about the challenging perceptions of what we think about Poe. We'll discuss superstition versus science and being attracted to darker roles as well. Now, Harry, who also played in Harry Potter as Dudley Dursley, we're also going to hear about really never completely escaping that film's universe. And of course, we'll get into some music as well. He's listening to some UK punk like Black Midi and Squid. We'll get into that and lots more. Talking about The Pale Blue Eye, it's Kyle Meredith with Harry Melling.
Hey, Kyle, how you doing?
Yeah, let me compliment you on Pale Blue Eye. What a wonderful story. Beautifully acted, incredibly shot. I mean, what an outstanding piece that you all have done here.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I talk about beautifully shot and for it being so cold, where did you guys shoot this at?
We shot in Pittsburgh. So it was very, very cold. Much like you see in the film, but I think in a way that really added to the whole atmosphere of this very brutal world that they found themselves in the 1830s.
And here you have, you're playing one of the great authors of all time, and we're talking about Edgar Allan Poe for this, which I don't know that I've ever seen Poe as a central character. I should start, what's your relation to him? I mean, did you have interest in Poe before you came into this?
I did. I mean, look, I didn't know much in terms of his writing. The things I did know were the Telltale Heart, which I think is probably the big one, alongside The Raven. And I also knew The Pit and the Pendulum, strangely. That was the other one that I was in the know about. And obviously I knew he was a very iconic writer. In a way, what was so exciting about the proposition of getting the chance to play him at a younger age was to very much challenge those perceptions of what people see when they say the name Edgar Allan Poe. Yes, he turned into this very somber, gloomy, dark figure. But what was he before that? And that was something that I really enjoyed sort of exploring.
So how do you find that character then? Because again, we all have this idea of, I mean, are you creating something or is it a deep research project? Where did you find this version of Poe?
It's a combination of both, I think. I think it's a lot of research went into this, a lot of reading his own stuff, as well as what other people wrote about him. And other people are very contradictory in terms of the things they said, which was actually a nice insight into who he was, this very mysterious figure. And so I take all that information, that research, and I'd go back to the script and I'd try and work out what was useful and what wasn't, because at the end of the day, we are creating something new and I wanted it to feel fresh and alive in that sense. And what Scott wrote quite brilliantly was this very charming, very, very awkward person who was trying to find a sense of home and belonging and was almost trying to don this performance as this young poet to the, you know, the crowds that he found himself in. And I thought that was really interesting. Someone who has not settled into his skin, he's not quite comfortable in who he is. And then I think during the course of the film, he reveals more and more about his you know, what's really going on with him, his vulnerabilities, his gentler side. And then hopefully by the end of the film, we understand why he turns into the person that we think of when we say the name Edgar Allan Poe. You know, this far darker, heavier, very complicated man. So that was kind of my goal, I think, throughout the filming, the journey of taking him from this very young, impressionable, awkward, very talented and smart guy into a far darker place.
It's interesting. A lot of times, or sometimes I should say, when these happen, like, you know, you can almost strip away, because we mythologize people and to take a backstory, to humanize them. I don't know, for me personally, that can strip away, but I don't feel like you, like the legend is still there for what you've done. Like it's still,
That's good to hear.
Happens. Yeah. And then there's this whole thing. I mean, when I look at this movie in this period, I mean, there's so much, I think, of science versus superstition.
Yep.
And Poe, like, where do you find that he is in this moment in his life? Because it does feel like a bit of a crossroads.
Absolutely. I mean, Poe was fascinated with the idea of death and the occult and the supernatural and what happened after you died. Where do you go? What is a life force? What is a spirit? What is a heart? All these things are in his writing, you know, in all his writing, really, and his poetry. And so I really tried to tap into that sense of, why is he so fascinated with this territory? Why is he so fascinated with cemeteries? For example, he loved going to cemeteries. So I started visiting cemeteries just as a sort of, just building up my world picture of who this man is. And I would take some of his writings and I'd read at the cemeteries and just soak up the atmosphere. And I think it's all there in Scott's vision. It treads this beautiful tonal line between being something that is very, has a real whodunit thriller element to it. But at the same time, there is this spirituality to it. There is this strangeness to it. And I think Scott brilliantly manages to capture that on film.
I mean, do you find yourself that you're attracted to roles like this? I mean, I think of some of your roles being supernatural, sometimes darker, you know, in that regard. I mean, does this have a certain allure to you?
Yeah, I mean, someone asked me this recently about what is the through line in terms of the choices you make as an actor. And I tend to try not to think of that, if possible. But obviously you're attracted to certain elements of people. So maybe there's a thing there that I find myself revisiting. I certainly like people who are restless, who are quite... who are quite full, you know, full of life. And, you know, that can be in a quiet way, but people who can really sort of, who have color to them and nuance. And so if I think a script has that, I often am more game to have a go at trying to offer something towards who this person might be.
Well, one thing I do appreciate about the roles you take, I mean, they seem to be adventurous.
Yes.
Even bringing out recently with Please Baby Please, I mean, you know, it seems to me like that's really what I do appreciate, is every character that you embody seems to be very adventurous roles.
Oh, that's really good to hear. I mean, what was so great about that movie and about a lot of the movies is, I think when I was younger, I had a big, there was a big sense of trying to get it right. you know, trying to you know, pick the right job or make the right choices for performance. And actually, the more and more I do it, I just want to experiment. I want to experiment with people that I really admire, actors and creators. And if I'm in that territory and there's no real sense of right and wrong and I'm always risking something, then I'm kind of happy, because I feel like I feel like it's always going to be a creative endeavor. And if I live in that world, I'm kind of fine. Even if it falls flat on its face, it doesn't really matter. As long as it's got some kind of intention behind it, then I'm good.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. Kyle Meredith with Harry Melling. We should bring up that cast because this movie has an incredible cast.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah.
And you know, let me not be condescending about that at all, because I want to say that you, I think, are one of the great actors of your generation, but you've also been working with these legends throughout your career too. Is there still a sense of getting your footing when you've got this many great actors around you?
I always say what great actors do is they lift you up into their space or place, whatever you want to call it. They elevate you to their greatness, for want of a better word. And that's what I found on this job. I mean, working so closely with Christian on this was just a joy. He is the most generous, giving actor. He's always there and present and alive for you. Even when he's off, he's just so focused, and it just lifts you into something else. And that was the same with you know, everyone in the cast. There was such a such desire to make something that was really special. And when you're working with like Timothy Spall, Gian Anderson, I mean, Robert Duvall, the list is endless. You're just constantly pinching yourself, saying, wow, I am amongst such great creators and artists. How lucky am I? So It was a wonderful experience.
I had the small chuckle when I saw Timothy Spall in it, because I didn't know he was in it beforehand. I said, for as many people played in the Potter universe, that must be impossible to really get out of that. That must be sort of always all around in one way or
another. It's a big thing, the Potter universe. It's something that I think all of us, I think it's probably fair to say, are very proud of. Very proud to be in something that is that significant and has reached so many, you know, lives and generationally as well. Like, friends of mine who are having kids are now sort of introducing their kids to the world. So it's a forever giving sort of storytelling life force almost. But at the same time, you have to move on. You know, you have to move on and get on with your life and pursue the things that interest you. And so that to me is the thing I want to do now. I want to sort of, you know, continue to invest in characters and creative people that I want to work with. And hopefully the Potter thing will slowly, you know, fade away. But it's not, I'm not turning my back on it. I'm just hoping that it will slowly sort of be less noisy.
Right. Well, just a comment on, you know, how many cast members are still just out there making amazing movies and films, arts, as it were. But, you know, I would like to hear more about especially you and Christian working together, because the rapport between you two, you know, again, it's perfectly suited for the both of you. Is this the first time you've worked together? And if so, like, what was the first meetings like of finding each other in these characters?
So it's the first time I worked with Christian, and I really hope it's not the last, because he was just a joy. And when we first met, I mean, the great thing about this whole process for me was there wasn't it wasn't a lot of discussion before turning up to set, or even when you're on set. There wasn't a big sort of let's sit around and talk about what the scene's about and what we want to achieve with the scene. Which for me personally, I love, because sometimes when you start talking about what you're going to do, you then have to do it. And, you know, you might not, it might feel wrong in that moment. And so what the whole process felt to me like was it just gently revealed itself to you. You do scenes, and I wouldn't go to Christian, oh, what if I try this? Or what if, you know, Christian, what if I try this? There was none of that. It was just a sense of just trying stuff out and just listening and seeing where the scene decided to go. And if it was going slightly off there, then Scott would say, oh, maybe you could think about this a bit more. And then we'd just try and change it into lean it more into this direction. And that's kind of what we did the entire time. It was just a very gentle, had an amazing flow to it. And it just revealed itself to us. So I personally love that way of working. And Christian, I think, very much lives in that space of constantly searching for the moment and being alive and listening to what's happening in that scene. So it was a lovely experience.
It sounds perfectly suited too for the pacing of the movie, because this movie has such a certain pacing to it that it, when those big moments happen, it feels so much bigger.
Yes.
And it sounds like this was actually part of the, like, this wasn't an editing trick is what I'm getting at.
No, I think it was. I think Scott is so interested in people, and he really wants to sort of dive into who they are. He was an actor. And so I think he wants to see actors really go deep and challenge who what's going on with these characters? What's making them tick? Why aren't they doing certain things? What are they hiding? And that takes time, I think, sometimes. Sometimes you need time to really understand those things. And I think the pacing of the film allows that, but also it allows, like you say, the big moments to hit and to happen and to really resonate in the way they need to. So, yeah, I think Scott's done a fine job, a really, really fine job with that.
Yeah, well, those big moments at the end are very big moments at the end.
Yeah.
I certainly love it. I want to quickly ask about, Charlotte Gainsbourg is in here, and I'm such an admirer, especially of her music. I started looking around at just the things that you've done with Charlotte, working with Pokey LaFarge, who I have great affinity for, back in The Devil All the Time. Even, I don't think you worked with him, but Tom Waits being in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. But, you know, with Charlotte being on the set, I mean, do you bring music as a part of your process at all?
I do. Yeah, I really do. I'm often in the car going to set and I'm listening to music just as a way of sort of slowly getting myself into a place. And often you find, you know, sometimes music really helps and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, it depends from job to job. Sometimes if you're playing a very chaotic person, you might listen to some very chaotic music and that might sort of let you get somewhere. But yeah, it changes from job to job. But it's, when you just said the names there, I'm so lucky to have got the chance to work with a few of them. Sadly, I didn't work with Tom, like you said, but certainly Pokey and Charlotte, who are just lovely, really lovely to work with.
What's your typical musical lane, if you don't mind me putting you on the spot?
Not at all. It's very eclectic. I'm sorry to say. At the moment, I'm getting really into my punk music. So I'm listening to this new band called Squid, which are
UK,
and they're really cool. They're really adventurous. And this other band called Black Midi, who are really out there. I don't know why. I'm just into maybe I don't know. Maybe something. Punk seems to be having a real sort of resurgence in the UK, certainly. Maybe people are really angry. I don't know. but yeah, so I'd say that right now. Yeah.
I love Black Midi, the past couple
of
things.
Yeah, they're great, aren't they? Really wild. Yeah. Really wild.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been watching that punk scene for a little while. Even the bigger stuff of like Fontaine's DC, that seems to be like the bigger side of it. Yeah, there's something special happening over there.
There is something happening. Something's going on. Yeah.
Here we are back in the 70s again somehow. I don't know. I'll sort of wrap it up with this, because, you know, as we look again at Poe and every character in here, I think there's a line about, you know, every character has their secret going on in this. And once we find out certain things as they unfold, I'll just throw out the basic question here. Do you think that Poe is blinded by love, or is it something else?
Good question. I think, yes, he is blinded by love. I think he wants what he wants, but don't we all? I mean, he wants to find his sense of place in the world. And he thinks he has. So I think it's more that, maybe, but that's to do with love at the same. Do you know what I mean? It's that sense of feeling safe. And I think he searched for that his entire life. Sadly, I think there was such a restless quality to him, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and sadly ended up with him passing away in very mysterious, strange circumstances. So.
Well, again, it's just a beautiful telling of this story from page to screen, and the way it started as the book. Harry, I can only congratulate you over and over again. Pale Blue Eye is such an incredible, incredible piece. Congratulations on again. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That was great. Thank you.
My thanks to Harry Melling. The Pale Blue Eye, now streaming on Netflix. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the full series. New interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcast, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence, they've got your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots as well, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all three of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.